Dark wings.
Dork words.
The Game of Thrones podcast.
Season 3, episode 1.
Valar Harris. All right, folks, we're back. Back for a brand new season. Much anticipated. Hotly awaited.
Much maligned. Already? No, not really.
Already beloved.
Season 3.
I am your host, Chuck Davis, and with me, embarking on this inaugural episode... Wait, season 3? Voyage?
Inaugural season 3.
Hey.
It's the first of the third seasons.
With me this week are...
Craig McCallie.
Mike Hergert.
Phil PJ Jonak.
Gentlemen.
Hello.
We're back into it.
We're back.
We're soaking...
I know we said we were back last week, but...
We're really back.
We're back. Mm-hmm.
This is... We're more... I feel like we're more back than we were last week. That's how much...
This is real, guys. Not like last week.
We thought we were back, but now we know we're back.
It's a good feeling when you know you're back.
We watched Prometheus before the episode.
Prometheus is on HBO, like, next Saturday. I was browsing along with my TiVo, considering, what movies might I record? Not Prometheus.
Oh, so you have HBO?
Yeah, I have HBO.
Everyone has it this weekend.
Oh, free.
It's free.
Oh.
For everyone.
That and with our HBO plugs, HBO's paid for all of our cable, and HBO is part of the podcast.
Buy HBO, everybody. Thank you.
What kind of Game of Thrones bounce do you think HBO will get from brand new subscribers who just watched this episode?
Percentage-wise?
Who's coming on that wouldn't have been anyway? That kind of thing?
Well, people have been BitTorrenting and purchasing DVD sets, receiving them as gifts, borrowing them from friends, water cooler talk, catching up.
Writing fanfic.
Or they're just like, hey, HBO's free this week. Cancel all our plans.
Listening to Dark Wings, Dork Words.
Forget all that Easter bullshit. We're going to sit here and watch HBO for free for 48 straight hours.
We're going to edit that Easter bullshit out, right?
Huh? No, we're going
to. Okay, keep that in.
Yep.
It's a dicey movie. Go up against the Christians, you know, on their big weekend.
I was in character as some...
Melisandre.
Burn the Christians.
The night is dark. Not sure about the terrors.
Just wait.
I think they'll get a good bump. I think...
You think this approach works? A free weekend with the first season of a show and people will be hooked?
It's putting a lot of faith in your own show.
That's kind of a classic drug dealer move. Like, the first taste is free.
It's a good move, right? And I mean,
how come everyone got quiet?
I was doing drugs. Yeah. Sorry. I was breaking up my pipe.
Well, I for one, am pretty stoked. Like I mentioned last week, I've distanced myself from the world of Westeros quite a bit. I haven't really thought about or watched this show or done any of the due diligence I ought to have done as the host of a Game of Thrones podcast. You know, for some of the reasons I mentioned, you know, the Batman burnout that I got from boning up on too much Batman business before going to see The Dark Knight Rises.
Holy alliteration. Was that on purpose?
Holy alliteration, Batman.
Kapow.
Actually, it would be Bam, I think.
Probably Bam.
It's true.
So I'm very happy I took a break. I'm familiar with this story, obviously, but it's nice to kind of revisit it the episode, as opposed to what a couple of you guys have done, which I still fully endorse, not for myself, but I'm glad that you guys have been reading the chapter summaries on TowerOfTheHand.com.
Maybe.
So you guys ought to be just bursting with...
flavor.
With pithy comparisons.
Mm.
But I'll start with. Shall I start us off?
Yes.
Shall I continue starting us off?
Cast us off, and we'll play a game about watching boats.
Cast
our boat off.
As Mike and I were waiting for you guys to arrive, the episode 10 of season 2 was playing in the background, and I noticed, you know, that the very tail end of the episode where Sam is fleeing from the White Walkers and the they don't call them others, they're just White Walkers. Do they even distinguish the zombies from the others on this show?
I don't think so.
I mean, they do visually.
Right.
But they just only ever call them White Walkers, right? They don't seem to be aware that... Do they call them whites? Ooh. No.
Can't say that.
Why are you asking us to remember anything?
No. All right. Okay, well, so the White Walker mounted on the dead stallion. It might have been a mare. I don't know. I like to say stallion. It might have been Italian. He turns. I remember Sam got a good look at the guy, but I didn't realize that
they locked eyes.
Fell
in love.
The White Walker looked at Sam, gave him a knowing gaze, just like, "You're fucked, kid. I see you." And then he raises his spear up in the air and does his creepy kind of
hiss thing,
high pitched like.
So the implication is they know that Sam is there. Sam has given up fleeing. He's just closed his eyes, and so then this episode opens with
with Sam doing the most fleeing he's ever done in his life.
That's right. He didn't really even look tired. He sounded a little winded, but he still was moving on along with a pretty good clip.
He was running a lot faster than he was at the end of the season 2, where he was just stumbling.
But you heard. I mean, we had the audio of some battle, and then you just see Sam fleeing and. So I guess I'm a little confused how he got away from those guys. I mean, I guess they just sort of...
Movie magic?
There's this fat old kid over here behind a rock. We're just going to...
Don't worry about him. Let's fight those other guys that are still a mile or so down the road. We'll come back around for this one. And so that's the first little... that doesn't quite make sense. I mean, it's still... I'm glad that they're sort of reintroducing those elements.
But I thought, they would just... kill everything in their path type deal.
That's what
they're just automatons.
That's what they ought to do. But maybe that White Walker,
not
for
really.
Some reason, he wanted to let Sam just chill. So
we catch audio of a great battle happening. Well, presumably that's the same.
A great
battle and
a great budget saving battle.
We see one guy beheaded. That's the toll of the battle.
He's got his own head in his own hands.
HBO went right after the Christians because I'll be damned if that guy didn't look just like Jesus.
I'm not going to touch that one.
And then Ghost comes out of nowhere and saves Sam. And I'm thinking. Whoa, that's weird. I mean, I guess they must have made a point of... Did John say, Ghost stay when he went off on his mission with Corrin Halfhand?
It was either that or Ghost was just out...
Aloof.
Yeah, aloof like he would for days and days.
I really don't... They've been awfully unspecific with Ghost's whereabouts.
Right.
He just kind of shows up when it's convenient and he disappears for episodes on end.
I didn't dislike it. I mean...
It's cool. I mean, Ghost is cool. We want Ghost to have heroic moments. He's good at those. But who's in charge of the direwolf when John is away for weeks on end?
I guess Sam, or...
Not well...
He at least feels an attachment to Sam because he knows he's nobody's.
At least he's on his best behavior when the Lord Commander.
Nobody has to be in charge of a direwolf.
That's what I would think.
Well, if you're not, then the direwolf is just gonna
murder you,
pretty much.
Or it'll be wild. I think it's pretty wild.
So those are some of my early thoughts from the early scenes. Did we cut away to the credits immediately following
the burning of the?
Sorry.
Burning of the white.
Yeah, I think so, yes.
And after we indicated that Samwell failed his one job, he had one job.
Yep. He couldn't...
Didn't send the ravens. I thought he did send the ravens in the books. Book. Well, it's too bad that Sam failed his one task. Although, in the moment that they were attacked, it's not like he had the Ravens with
him. Yeah, they were just out shoveling snow.
They never did a very good job of establishing the location of the Fist of the First Men.
Right. Yes.
Because Iceland is just flat. That's why, like, you know, the creepy dark forest that ought to be the land beyond the wall just turned into Iceland, like, abruptly between episodes at some point last season.
But. With some dragon glass randomly smattered about.
Well, the opening credits, not opening, because it...
Well.
The credit sequence. Yeah.
The open, as they say.
We got a new place.
Astapor was featured. Right? Oh, was there Winterfell depicted as burning?
I believe it looked pretty decrepit. Yeah.
They altered it.
Yes, I didn't notice that.
But the tree still lived.
Heart tree still there. Wood. Well, we got that going for us,
which is nice.
So we come back from the credits. That was the only couple changes, right? Astapor and
Dragon's Reach,
Burning Winterfell.
Was it Dragon's...
Dragonstone.
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 D-Stone. So after the credits, we get right to some more snowy adventure.
Yeah.
With Jon Snow.
Jon Snow meets Snow. Mance Rayder and Tormund Giantsbane.
Yeah.
Who, Tormund was a lot different than I imagined he could have been portrayed. He was just kind of like a serious...
Serious fellow.
Just a serious tough guy. But the Tormund Giantsbane I remember from the book was sort of a lighthearted, a larger-than-life fellow.
More jovial.
Seeing the giant was cool.
That was cool.
Also not quite as depicted in the books, but,
yeah,
you know. I appreciate any CGI elements.
Or I think you should consult.
Was it just forced perspective in this case?
Yeah, I think that was probably CGI.
Yeah.
Guy on stilts. .com.
Well, could be a guy on stilts, too.
But just because a guy's tall doesn't mean it's easier to pound a log into the frozen earth with your fist.
It was like a bone, wasn't it? Like a mammoth bone or something?
There were a couple questionable physics moves, like the rapidity with which the white's cloak caught on fire. You can only assume he was out in the cold dampness forever, and the minute they put a torch to him, he went up like Kendall.
Right. I thought it was a little lame, too, that Ygritte's anecdote about having once seen an angry giant
pound a
guy into the ground like he was a nail into
like
wood.
Like he was doing what that guy's doing.
Yeah.
You know, when that happened on Skyrim, I mean, you didn't go into the ground. You actually shot up about 200 feet in the air.
Got a good view of the landscape.
Not sure which physics is right.
Well, there's only one way to find out.
Find some giants.
Find some giants.
What do we think about the meeting with Mance?
I liked it. What do you guys think? What's your read on Mance, Phil? This is your first look at this legendary character?
I'm kind of surprised they took the answer that they ended up taking after they come off all which badass. Is like
John's explanation for why he turned his cloak.
I imagine you have to have a pretty good reason to switch sides, and they know that. It seems like they're a not shit taking people.
Yeah, they let him know, like, you're on trial here. Like, don't give us a bullshit answer.
Like, making music with their axe blades, like, you know, we're right here, we can behead you.
This guy's just over sharpening his axe blade.
Then he tries once, fails miserably, and I didn't really buy the second explanation that much better, I guess, you know? But I guess I didn't realize these people's affiliation or hatred of White Walkers.
Well, I mean, the whole meeting with Mance is just completely different than the books.
Quite different.
Yeah. Which
Mike never promised he wasn't going to say that.
Yeah, I never did. Chuck did. But I mean, I think it was effective, but I mean, in the book, like, Mance is like singing basically as like a kind of like entertaining. And this is a more like really somber, like just like three dudes in a tent just sharpening axes and one guy kind of brooding in the corner, just, you know, they kind of did a little shot over to him. Where, you know, if you'd read the book, you probably kind of could guess. It's like, oh, they're going to show Mance a little bit kind of just back in the corner because the guy that he's talking to really isn't Mance.
How about the whole bowing down to Tormund and saying your grace? I mean, that was
pretty good.
It was
That's kind of a Jon Snow move from
But they effectively made him look ridiculous in the context of the moment.
It really did. Or he made himself look pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it was believable that he would do that, and it was apparent how ridiculous it was for him to have done it. I think having read it in the book, you know, you don't necessarily picture John looking like an idiot when you're reading the thing sort of through his point of view. Yeah, they really trimmed the cast of characters that are sort of Mance's entourage down to just two characters, really. Oh, well, there's the Lord of Bones, who's packed on a few pounds from the way he's described in the books. He's supposed to be just sort of like a rail thin, skeevy character, I think. But he still looks
skeevy.
He just looks like a heavy set fella.
Yep. Looks like he's been eating well.
Yeah.
Out in the snow.
There was a longing lover's glance as Ygritte left the tent.
She likes you.
You like her. You like the her?
I thought John's excuse for turning cloak was interesting as well. In the book, he is kind of put on the spot, and he decides he has to think fast and come up with something convincing. So he sort of tells a half-truth of having grown up.
Corn half-truth.
Corn half-truth. He pulls a corn half-truth.
I knew him when he told the full truth and nothing but the truth.
He tells a story of what it's like to grow up a bastard in the house of the Starks and not...
Phil can relate. Oh, that's not what you're pointing at, Craig? Okay.
Jeez.
And not be regarded as a full member of the family.
Sounded way better. You know.
Yeah, I mean, he's sort of convinced...
I don't see why he didn't say that, though. I mean, I don't see what that's going to...
Because zombie fever's in.
Yeah.
Is it possible that they thought the viewing audience would believe it? And it would...
That crossed my mind, that if John said, like, you know, if he acted like sort of the spiteful bastard, people might change their opinion of him.
But he never was really spiteful, I mean.
No, he's always been just sort of like...
part of the family, except for Catelyn, who is like,
Right.
Right, I mean, he would be saying that just to deceive or, you know, try and get in good with the North.
But I like him saying, basically, you know, describing the scene, what he's seen. He's seen one of the White Walkers, and he knows that this is serious shit. And if the Night's Watch isn't going to take it seriously,
they're going to knowingly lie about it.
Join up with the team that's going to do something about it. That, to me, I thought that was a compelling thing, and it almost sounds like John believes it, which I think is going to bode well for this season. Where you start to wonder...
Where loyalties lie.
Well, you start to wonder whether John has really turned his cloak or not. And so it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Bunch of new pals, hot, redheaded, horny girlfriend, all that shit he said, you know? Yeah.
It's amazing the makeup they get north of the wall these days.
It's a lot better than my makeup.
Your blue lips.
So I think from then we go to Tyrion, sort of...
Or we go to Bronn.
Well, Bronn.
Yeah.
We go to Tyrion by way
it could
of...
Be, yeah.
Let's not gloss over what Bronn has going on.
Oh, Craig, describe it to
no,
us.
No, we can. It's fine.
He brings the end to the episode.
So Bronn's in a whorehouse. Okay. Well,
we get a good...
Don't gloss over it.
Topless brothel scene in the first 10 minutes of the episode. That's probably pretty key. I guess call that
a capital N. I'm going to call those capital N's. Nudity.
Capital nudities, two of them.
Craig gave it three thumbs up.
That's no thumb.
It's a space station.
We made it an episode in a little bit without talking about dicks. New record.
I was talking about thumbs.
Uh-huh.
So it's okay.
I think they did a good job of sort of recapping all the characters' sort of motivations, and they did a good job of... Well, they didn't show all the characters,
right?
But all the ones that were included in this episode, they're starting them off well to kind of bring everybody up to speed of where they're at and stuff. I like all the explaining how Bronn has become Sir Bronn.
Yeah, they just get kind of that quick mention or whatever, and there that he's, you know, he mentions that, oh, I'm a Sir, like, Blackwater now or whatever it is.
Podrick Payne is there to explain it to Sir Meryn Trant. Yeah.
That stupid guy. He doesn't know anything.
We've come a long way since season one, where the Kingsguard are wearing their helms, and you never acknowledge what character they are or what they're saying. This time, the first time you see one, they make a point of pointing out what his name is, which is useful
because
Meryn Trant is a douche and
new characters.
So, what do we think of Tyrion and Cersei's interactions?
I was thinking I like Cersei this season. I mean, I've always hated her character. She's always been loathsome. I was kind of...
Tonight's episode, she had some pretty good,
I just, like,
under-the-table quips.
Good moves.
Yeah.
I like Cersei when she thinks she's winning. Her just sort of imperious, aloof, condescending demeanor, it becomes her. She was just sort of like squeaming uncomfortable all last season, and she was just sort of bitter resentful all the first season. So now that she's kind of triumphant, it
we'll really get like the full Cersei arrogance, and I think it'll be good.
Yes, I'd like to get the full Cersei.
We still talking about queens?
But we do get a typical Cersei Tyrion exchange where they just, you know, basically,
man, everyone's favorite character is still on the outs where we left him. Ooh, he's not doing so well.
He's not my favorite character. No.
Well, HBO wants him to be.
Okay. Tyrion?
Yeah.
Tyrion had a great episode here. His scene with Cersei was awesome. I mean, it's unusual to see him sort of fearful and resentful and stuff. And his scene with his father, where he was, like, defensive and, you know, he finally just sort of, after a couple half-hearted quips, just sort of laid it out for his father and said, look, how about some damn...
Some recognition.
Recognition, give yeah. And that scene, some of the things they said are, like...
Yeah, it's pretty...
Pretty directly from that pivotal moment in the books, just to kind of lay it out where Tyrion stands now. You know, basically going into that battle of the Blackwater as the Hand of the King and, you know, really fighting for his city and his family and everything, and just how far and how quickly that has all changed.
What did you get from the Tywin, the final, when he's walking out about the horse situation? I mean...
I don't know.
Next horse in your beds...
So, in the last season, we see it's, you know, like, Joffrey gets the one chick, whatever, with the horned, whatever it is, but...
gets the one chick, whatever,
with the horned, whatever it is.
I'm looking out for the kids, guys.
I forgot about that. I think I blocked it.
Because in the book, we find out maybe it wasn't Joffrey that really... Ordered the whore beating from last season. It was really Tywin that knew about that. So did you get that maybe that was Tywin that ordered the whole second season shenanigans?
No, but I think
they changed it.
That's going all the way back to the end of the first season, I think, when Tywin tasked Tyrion with the job of being the Hand of the King in his proxy. He said, I forbid you to bring any whores to court, essentially. I can't remember how he said it exactly, but... So then, that's the kind of the first thing he brings up when he sees him again.
Hors d'oeuvres, however, are allowed.
I heard you brought some whores to court. You old whore banger, you.
Not so much against the wine, but mostly anti-whore.
He just really, yeah, plays the shaming you with your whoring ways card heavy.
And the killing your mom thing that, you know, kind of...
That's 1-2 punch.
Jeez, get over it already. Ugh.
Yeah, that's harsh. So we can see that it's going to be a rough season for Tyrion.
It's hard out here for a dwarf.
He was on that real up and up until, you know, last season pretty much of... Or the last episode of... Second season, where he got the old axe to the face.
The old axe face.
Happens.
Well, and Cersei's triumph was short-lived because she immediately is on the defensive now.
What's Tyrion going to tell Dad?
Well, not that. I was thinking of Marjorie Tyrell.
Oh, yeah.
And her machinations to win over the hearts of the people of Fleabottom.
What do you think of that whole?
I think
she knows what she's doing.
She does.
Yeah.
But by the same token, they're showing it, it's kind of the first positive light that they've showed Marjorie Tyrell in. Yeah, don't you think?
Well, I was going to say period. First positive moment in the series. Uplifting.
Oh, do you just be, someone helping the poor?
Yeah. Basically.
Just the fact that that's happening?
Do you take it for face value? Do you think that she's...
I don't take it for face value, but I mean, it's...
it was a real first lady moment or something like that. Just...
Yeah. Well, it just seems abruptly out of character for her to be genuinely a good-hearted person, at least
she's when it's more convenient scheming, to be right? so.
We don't know that much about her. I mean...
We just know that she...
She wants to be queen.
She wants to be queen.
Like every young lass.
She's willing to do whatever.
She was eager to play ball with Renly, and she sort of knew what was up with him and Loras. And I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that. but you know, that she was willing to live a lie in order to gain power, and that she was so...
And she's pretty much lying now, because I don't know that she really... I mean, it's just for show, pretty much, I think, to...
She's still...
No, she looks into Joffrey.
Oh.
I could see a real chemistry.
She's still... She's still pretty...
Doing a thing?
Yeah.
For you?
Yeah.
You want to lick it?
Wait, what are we talking about?
We're rewarding repeat listeners by referring to our past podcasts, of course.
Contextual references.
It kind of seems like maybe the important character of Lord Tyrell, who ought to be sitting on the king's small council and throwing the weight of the Tyrells and Highgarden around. He's kind of... Maybe he won't make an appearance here. Maybe basically Loras and Marjorie are going to have to... Oh, no, I take that back, because in the scenes from next week, we have seen...
Lady Tyrell.
Lady Tyrell. Yeah. That's right. So there's...
I mean, that's a pretty important conversation, so, but we'll get to that next week.
Yeah, so there are some other Tyrells in play.
We wash up to a Davos on a rock.
Davos on a rock. Yeah, there's kind of like a lengthy chapter that's
right.
kind of like the Tom Hanks Castaway.
Which, I mean,
for it's, Davos, that they escalate to, just coming to and looking up.
Seeing
and
a ship right away.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, yeah. I mean, he's really considering just suicide. Dying out there, and I don't want to flag down the ship. I just want to die on this rock, which don't kind of get any of his. Mindset during that.
Maybe they didn't want to show him as weak of character at all.
He looks weak of face right now. Boy.
Apart from those face blisters.
That beard could be less groomed for me, though. Beard still looks pretty good.
But it does kind of...
There's some sharp rocks out there. He probably trimmed it.
But I really like how they framed that moment of, you know, the rescuers asking him which king he serves. And then so he... proves his undying loyalty. He doesn't try to... Well, he doesn't know which one to pick anyway, so it's just sort of like a...
Might as well tell me, you know, say who I'm really for, I guess.
Might as well be honest.
Lord... What was that?
He's a principled man. If he knew that they were the enemy come to get him, he might have said Stannis anyway.
Well, he's not just faithful to Stannis, but isn't he already Stannis' hand?
Promised, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
were he to be king.
Well, it's nice that they had kept that moment in so that you know that Stannis, or that Davos is still loyal and true to Stannis, which makes his fate at the, when he reaches Dragonstone, that much.
More poignant.
I liked his scene with Salladhor Saan quite a bit, too.
Me too.
Salladhor was
really
awesome.
Yep. Which I think it was probably better than probably what was in the book, I think, if I remember right, which I don't remember a lot. But Because I think in the book, they just kind of meet up at Dragonstone already. I don't think Salador gives him a... I mean, he's just on some strange ship. Who picks him up?
I don't think they did a great job of establishing Davos and Salador's relationship in season two.
Right. They just kind of meet on the beach in the one scene. Things are promised.
Who has time to establish?
There was a lot. There's a lot of story to squeeze in there.
There is.
But so this
people want the action, not the establishing,
or at least they want to hear the action, or have it alluded to off screen.
Off screen for free.
Melisandre was good with her sort of
being Melisandre ways,
sort of faux affectionate towards him, or sort of just genuinely pitying him because she knows that she's kind of got him right where she wants him. I liked how they turned the whole thing around on.
They turned him out.
Yeah.
Or you get the sense that the discussion since the end of the battle has been,
how did Davos fuck up?
Well, you fucked up by not bringing Melisandre. You fucked up by not bringing me along with you, says Melisandre.
She convinced our king not to bring me along.
He's truly rattled there.
He's just
looking away and
he's got a
you know.
Well, it looks like a genuine moment of doubt, but then he comes out with the dagger. And yep.
when in doubt,
he goes from
crying to stabbing.
He had the whole ship ride to think about how he was going to do this confrontation, and he goes to broken down, like over emoting in 10 seconds, and then from that to daggers out. Yeah. It's a very quick range.
That's Davos for you.
Yeah.
Stannis is not happy.
He looks depressed.
Period. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he last time we saw Stannis, he was like boldly sieging the walls of King's Landing all by himself.
With no helm.
No helmet.
With no helmet. Helms, where I'm going, we don't need helms.
Helms be damned.
He's lucky to be alive.
Now he looks like he's in a sky dungeon, basically, looking out on his chair.
I was admiring the set design of that map room of Dragonstone this time around. I know we've seen it before, but I don't know if we've ever seen it in the daytime with the light coming in.
Yeah, it was just candlelit, I think, previously.
It looked cool.
Everyone looks good by candlelight. Just a fact.
Mm. Craig's fact for the week. You'll get one every week. They'll all be lies, but it's okay. Did we miss the scene already with Sansa and what's her name?
Oh, Shay.
Shay. Sansa and Shay.
Chuck's favorite.
And what's the name of Littlefinger's favorite?
Roz.
Roz, yes.
Roz. Roz. Yeah.
Roz. The meeting of the whores.
Quite a moment.
Kind of a comeuppance discussion there, you know?
It's not easy for us young girls, right?
Yeah. In today's world.
I said right? Whatever.
But it kind of gets to a conversation that, I mean, no one really knows that Shay is Tyrion's lady, except it seems like Roz kind of...
Roz figured it out. Well, she doesn't... Yeah, she...
She know a whore knows a whore, I guess. Well,
by the tattoo.
Her whore sense was tingling.
Her whore-dar. Whore-dar.
Good job.
I liked Sansa's moment was nice. I liked... It was good.
It's a relevant moment for sure.
She seems a lot more mature. I mean, despite... You're doing the game wrong.
Well, she's a woman now. So.
Well, and yeah, I know.
Littlefinger, tell me where, when, why, please.
It looks like, in spite of the fact that Ser Dantos was featured in, I think it was season 2, episode 1.
He's really not a factor.
He's not a factor. The whole Sansa's hope of rescue
great
thing.
Great jester hope or whatever it was. He was a jester, right?
He became a jester.
Yeah.
A fool.
A fool, if you will.
Do you pity the fool?
You really kind of do.
Sir T.
Uh, But yeah, it looks like Littlefinger is the one that's gonna be Sansa's hope of escape.
Spirit her away, maybe.
Maybe that's what he's promising her anyway.
We don't know.
He's making promises
that he
promises. Promises.
Ah, we had our friend Scott Anderson
follow up.
Post a comment to our last episode, and he said he linked to like the YouTube clip of that song, and I can't remember who the artist was.
Naked Guys.
This episode features strong language and naked eyes.
As Craig calls it, what were you going to call
Capital
it?
Capital N.
Okay. What about this Harrenhal?
The Harrenhal mess.
I see Rob.
I'm pretty confused here.
I am too, and I know what's happening.
Yeah.
Well, I know what's supposed to be happening.
But. Yeah.
So they come in, strolling in, looking for a fight. They're anxious for a battle.
So it's Rob and his army just on the move, and he's riding alongside Roose Bolton, and they ride up on Dragonstone, and there's just 200 dead
North. Not Dragonstone. Strike that. Harrenhal.
Edit that out.
Yes, Harrenhal.
And there's this
200 dead Stark bannermen, or I guess,
or
at least some North, of them.
Only 199. We find out.
Well,
when the one guy comes to,
the one guy who does come to is Qyburn, not a Northman, as you and I know.
Ooh.
Well, there's another guy holding somebody else's banner, right? That's kind of like.
What was up with that? Who were those?
Kind of giving the mean mug.
They were holding the wolf's banner. Well, I think they were just kind of PO'd about the whole
sitch.
Catelyn not being.
Were they Karstark
dead? Basically,
men?
They could have been.
It's Lord Karstark is the
was
the is the bellyacher, right? Who's gonna keep bitching about his sons being killed by?
They're in the ground, man.
By. The
get over it again, jeez.
The Kingslayer. Right?
She remarked about the Tully bannerman in the mix, right?
Yeah,
who was stabbed.
She goes up to the guy with the dagger.
That's right.
Dagger chest.
It's like this guy right there,
Sir Jaime Malister, one of my father's bannermen. So okay, let's just extrapolate from that. We were wondering whether the subplot of Catelyn's father would be included in this season. I think just the fact that she mentioned her father's name. I think they're going to end up.
I don't even think River Run will be in this. I think they're just going to hold her at Harrenhal. And
you think
will we see Hoster?
Yeah, you might be right.
When's Edmure going to show up?
God, it sucks that they never go to River Run. That's not cool.
Not cool, man.
But oh well.
I mean, it's not on the opening credits, or else they would be going there.
They can add it any time they want.
So Rob's pretty quick to toss his mom in a stall.
Yep.
Well, even though...
Doesn't she deserve it?
Yes.
Well, I thought she deserved more before.
You can't force march someone in a prison cell, so he was just letting her not be in a prison because they had to get moving.
You can lead your mom to water, but you can't teach her how to get in a stall.
Tune a piano.
I don't know. Rob's new wife, the
field nurse.
Hot lips field nurse makes herself useful here. She kind of pats the guy's shoulder a little bit.
Well, you can see her in the background tending to the corpses as they're.
Did you guys know that she's Charlie Chaplin's granddaughter?
No idea.
Now you know.
And knowing's half the
battle. How'd you find that out?
Boom.
A series of interconnected and decentralized computers used to transfer...
ARPANET?
Yeah, ARPANET.
I got this one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you mean you were stalking her.
That's not true.
You checked out her. He was looking for her on Facebook.
I was stalking Charlie Chaplin. She popped up.
Well, she doesn't have Charlie's mustache, so it's hard to tell.
Well, she shaves it.
It's true.
Promises, promises.
What was next? What's after Harrenhal? Or is there more discussion on Harrenhal?
So
we're still kind of wondering what they're doing there.
I don't know why they're there or where they're going.
Littlefinger's headed there, evidently. Right?
No. Roose Bolton's got his best hunters out looking for him.
No, for Jaime Lannister. For
the Kingslayer.
The Kingslayer.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
But Littlefinger's...
Oh, Littlefinger...
Littlefinger is Lord of Harrenhal now.
He's promised Harrenhal, and he's made allusions to heading out at some point.
But...
Did Littlefinger go to Harrenhal last season for anything? No, no. He went to...
Did he fast travel?
He just found out that he was, like, at the end of the season.
When did Littlefinger see Catelyn?
When Renly died.
Season 2 season episode. Two.
All the way back when Renly died.
Yep.
8?
Okay.
7?
Right. And that's when he had his chat with Margaery to lure the Tyrells to King's Landing's rescue in exchange for the crown.
Right.
So who took the Northmen down?
Well, where did we leave? I mean, Lord Tyrell abandoned Dragonstone.
Harrenhal.
Thank you. Yeah.
Chuck's not even drinking, guys.
No.
Maybe that's a problem.
He didn't even have a piece of pie.
But I think, well...
So he abandoned...
I assume they just killed all the commoners that were there when they...
They had a bunch of prisoners. Yeah. So were those just all the POWs they were holding
or
there?
Or their servants and stuff, and they just...
Slaughter them all and move out?
Yeah.
Now, refresh my memory again. Did not Jaime and Brienne end up at Harrenhal? Did that
do you
happen?
Mean Dragonstone?
God, no. No, that didn't happen.
They were on the make. Have they had an encounter with a boat yet?
I guess
no.
Okay,
maybe we'll withhold all Jaime and Brienne.
Yeah.
Chat until next episode because they will be featured, right?
Until mm-hmm. we see that sexy beast, Jaime.
Yeah.
You're not speaking of the
Sapphire of Tarth.
Or Tarth, Karth.
The Jewel of Sapphire Island, or what?
Jewel of the Nile?
The Ruby?
The She-Bear? No.
The Jewel of Sapphire.
We get a little Daenerys action in this.
Oh, yes.
So, what do we...
Oh.
Pants vaporized.
Astapor, y'all.
So what do we? So
Slaver's
we,
Bay.
So yeah, guys, a bunch of Dothraki walk on a boat. Stop me if you've heard this.
What do we think of the whole? I mean, we see him on the boat. The dragons are
going up,
getting larger, like Leon.
Her Khalasar is kind of
is a bunch of puking, bedraggled
Dothraki.
But we kind of have that conversation with Daenerys and what's his name?
Jorah
Mormont.
Which Jorah's quite different than the book.
Is
to
it?
Be, to be honest, yeah. Because we've met certain people that we meet later in this episode, or some scarab stabbing guys who are already with him at this point.
Curved swords.
Well, that yeah, things got
mixed up,
fast tracked there a little bit.
Originally, they had a different destination and. Jorah talked her into Astapor and the Unsullied.
Oh, there's a key thing missing there.
Mm-hmm.
Where Jorah talked them into stopping at a different port on their way to Astapor so that he could send a report back to...
Oh, yeah. West.
The Westeros, because he still is ostensibly an agent of King Baratheon's court, right? Or at least he's keeping up appearances that he is. But he keeps that on the DL.
Should we supposed to know that?
No, Phil knows all about that.
He don't understand it. Don't worry.
But that scene was changed a little bit. The little scene with the... is it...
On the boat.
One of the faceless ones? Like the creepy, hissing little assassin girl?
Little girl.
For those of us who have read a little further in the books.
For those about to read.
It's an interesting choice that they made the assassin in this case look like a little street urchin girl.
And which I think that was pretty well done.
The insect was going to kill her? I mean, that thing? Really?
Yep.
Because he's
the manticore.
The dude's like, hey, I just saved your life. And I'm like, she was going to get stung.
It was moving fast. Clickety-clack across the cobblestones.
Yeah, but you would think it's something that would like lay a stinger in, and then it would die, and you'd probably be pretty itchy for a day or two.
Nope, but she would have got live. No.
Well, get more ferocious then.
Somehow Danny knew that it was going to be fatal. Like, you saved my life. For sure, you definitely saved my life.
That's, yeah, right. I assume that everyone, because it was so colorful and creepy looking, everyone just assumed it was fatal.
Unless it's the damn lizard that took out Dennis Nedry in Jurassic Park. Fuck. That thing's not going to kill you.
Maybe it is.
Sansa is taller than Littlefinger.
That's why they call him Littlefinger. Am I right?
Up top.
He can't reach.
What do we think of the conversation with Daenerys and the whole Unsullied deal?
We had some questions about that after it happened. She was like repugnant. You mean, you know, to make these men better warriors, you sacrifice 8,000 babies? I'll take them!
Yeah, all 8,000. How many do you have?
Well, I mean, she's out to get the throne, and now she cares about everything that happens on the way there, too.
She always cared.
Was Ser Jorah trying to convince her that by buying them, she could save them somehow? Because by having forced them to kill babies, that they were
slave trader himself.
Traumatized.
You know, yeah. He's used to this rhetoric.
Do we think Peta had anything to do with this episode?
Well, there was a dead horse in Harrenhal.
You know, in the book, they each raise a dog when they're, and then they have to kill it.
That's right. This whole killing babies thing is like way worse than what the Unsullied had to do in the books.
People for the ethical treatment of
babies.
Peth. It's like, humans.
I'd rather kill a baby than a dog, right? Oh!
How many... I mean...
That's hypothetical.
What a waste of future slaves to kill off. For every one Unsullied, you're losing a baby.
Right.
They really have that many babies available for the
They must be really prosperous. They can.
Why would anyone have a baby? You knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. Well, they were just slave babies.
They're still babies.
Yeah,
because people like to do it. They like the doing it.
I loved that whole conversation with the slaver.
And the subtitles of...
Yes, I'd forgotten all about that.
Man, Craig did not like the nipple slice, I can tell you that much.
No one could ever touch it again, so then you'd be fine, right?
I don't like having my nipples touched. Little backstory. That's the whole story.
Much
get
less...
Get away from me.
Much less sliced off.
I think the nipple slice would have been especially traumatic for Danny, because that's what killed Khal Drogo, was a nipple slice.
A little scratch.
Scratch across the nipple.
I thought the dude was just going to get it right there, knife to the chest.
I did too, and I'm almost convinced that that's what happened in the book.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I think he just casually killed an Unsullied, didn't he?
He cut his nipple off.
He really
it stuck with me. I remember that.
All right.
Let me ask you guys this.
Craig dreams of it every night.
In the bad way.
No, good way.
Let me ask you guys this. This is just stupid speculative trivia almost. So three dragons, really baby dragons from last season that were probably an eighth of the size of these dragons combined could set a man on fire. What do you think these three dragon size combined could set on fire successfully?
A giant.
A giant. Good.
Evidently an albacore, because it looks like it cooks a fish.
Yep. The tuna had no chance. Make its time. I think they could roast. I think one of them could maybe roast a giant.
Could they roast a comedian, though?
What level are the dragons at now? 37?
Yep.
They're still only two hit dice.
Only two 20-sided.
Nerd.
2d12. I like where this is all going, though.
Nowhere? Oh. I know, I meant the episode, not our episode, not the real episode.
What don't you like about our episode?
Who'd we miss this episode?
We didn't comment on Joffrey.
And his cowering in his little hutch. Whatever
cowering in the commons.
Clutching a perfumed kerchief to his nose. Why is...
Well, perfect timing. He just kind of... Do you want to go out there, sir? No. I'm just going
to... Do you want to talk to your lady? Give her a proper talking to.
Yeah, we missed the whole kind of conversation between Marjorie, Sir Loras, Joffrey, and Cersei, which is really pretty good.
We breezed by it. Yeah.
I find it hard to believe that even if Marjorie was fairly brazen and fearless...
That she would do that.
She wouldn't be dragging a dress with a train through a puddle of shit. She at least would have tucked up her train or removed it or...
Or had her assistant do it. Who's her assistant?
Yeah.
Her handmaiden?
Mm-hmm. Find out. I'll be gone.
Bathe her and bring her to me.
Let's compare and contrast.
Compare handmaids.
Joffrey's treatment of Sansa versus Marjorie.
I mean,
fuck. Whenever you guys are done.
I mean, Joffrey seems like a total, well, bitch now. Compared, I mean, he's
yeah. He was
Marjorie has just kind of overrun him, and he's doesn't know what to do. I don't think,
but she's still nice to him,
and he's kind of playing against or playing off of it against Cersei through the whole conversation.
Is that a big part of it?
She definitely effectively disarmed Joffrey, who was like sort of at the maximum of his power.
Yep.
At the end of the last episode, was he not?
Yeah.
When he was sort of...
He's kind of giving out his
the whole scene,
just rewards from...
From...
the battle.
Yes, that's right.
And he's like, oh, no. Oh, you don't have to marry this woman anymore? He's like, oh, yeah, great.
How about her? Come to me if you want help with these orphans, directly to me. Don't go... Don't pass go. Yeah. Don't talk to any other Lannisters.
You can see her slyness just kind of getting in there.
It'll be good to see.
Your slyness?
Yes, your slyness.
And we kind of get the Cersei Joffrey little banter back and forth about, oh, well, we were never really in danger, Mom. I was just almost got killed. No, it's cool.
The way you say it, I sound like a pussy.
It's not like I got my arm bitten off by a wolf or anything before. Or
got my sword thrown in the river and cried about it.
Run off in the middle of a battle.
But then what does he say back to her? He's like,
My mother is weak and her memories are failing.
She's old.
Yeah.
That old hag.
She only defers to him at the last moment, kind of. She's gotten a few barbs in and then, showing her place. Yes, you know, of course, you're my lord. But still, the barbs.
Good barbs.
Cersei's always playing defense.
Most of the time, right? She plays a little offense.
She gets highly offensive and, well.
You're out of order.
I'm out of order.
This whole court's out of order.
Phil, any speculations on where things are going?
I'm guessing we're going to see some Kingslayer travel action next episode.
Mm-hmm.
We have to catch up with Arya next time.
Mm-hmm.
Next time on Game of Thrones. We don't know what's happening in Harrenhal, how that's going to shake out.
Are those... Bran and Osha on the run.
Bran on the run.
Bran doesn't run so well.
A new Sarah.
Too soon. Sorry.
Ouch.
Ooh. Sorry, Bran. He only runs well in his dreams. I think next week will be good. I think we should be caught up on everybody from last season.
I do like the opening scene. They're like, well, if you didn't send those ravens, we got to get back to the wall because we got to tell those guys.
Let's hightail it out of here.
Yeah, but except they're on the back end of the battle, I would think, you know? You have to catch up to the White Walkers and then...
Well, so did they kill all the White Walkers? They set them all on fire?
Like,
I assume.
Here's the last one. About to kill Sam. Got him.
Well, did it appear at the very opening scene there that, like, sort of the cloud of coldness that sort of was whooshing in at the end of last season was whooshing, receding as the sun rose. It was like a sunrise, and you could see the whooshing.
Can you ever see whooshing?
Whoosh. Is the idea that the others were retreating from the sunlight?
I didn't get anything clearly like that.
Okay, I'm not sure if that jumping to conclusions there. I mean, the idea was that somehow the battle was over and the others went away, but there's no explanation for why, especially when there's a perfectly giant pack of Night's Watch dudes still around to be killed.
Did they really just gloss over that battle with the first 5 seconds of black? Because the last thing last season the huge pack of whites and white walkers?
Tons of guys.
And then this?
And then everybody's got bloody scratches on
their face. Yeah, they all have bloody faces.
I guess they really just didn't even bother for, would it be exposition or any sort of a dialogue between two characters about, oh, that battle.
The less said, the better.
What happened north of the wall?
I think we're disagreeing with that comment.
Yeah, no, I mean,
that was their take.
From a production standpoint, it's let's not dwell on what we can't afford to do.
And the whole bring up of the Night's Watch in season two is these guys are a bunch of fucking misfits, and nobody can even swing a sword, and there's 20 of them. And then we leave off the season with...
Well, Mormont had a torch.
Well, yeah. You can't overstate that.
Get behind me, everyone.
Each one of those Night's Watchmen slew a converted corpse of Khorne Halfhand. All of them.
Oh, that reminds me. Bronn's dagger situation was pretty badass.
Yeah.
I liked that he was ready to throw down with two of
he was ready to throw down his gauntlets.
The Kingsguard.
And we kind of got a little more of a conversation with Tyrion about, you know,
Knight's
Cost double. You gotta pay me a little more, man.
Big time.
That was a good scene.
Tyrion says, I don't know how much I pay you now.
Then you can afford it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good one. Bronn is cool.
Sick burn, Bronn. Sick.
Well, I don't know if there's much more we can elaborate on this one.
Not much else.
Judges?
You guys, ye of the chapter summary.
I think, reading. I guess the only really other big difference that I noticed was the whole, really when Tyrion goes to see his dad, he's really still kind of actually completely fucked up. And then basically I think like Bronn has to carry him up the stairs because he's still half awake and, you know, messed up.
They're not, nobody really seems to bear their injuries that
one thing bad.
A flesh wound.
As a non-book reader, one thing we did hear was, I heard you lost your nose in the battle.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not so much.
She was going to say, I heard you lost your nose in the book.
Yeah. It's not that bad at all. Read my contract. I get to keep my nose. Tyrion was up and about.
Which I think is better for, you know, the series. We don't want to... He's already a dwarf. We don't need to, you know...
We don't need to have two people getting carried around.
You can't say that. Can you? You did.
Yeah.
You did. How many comments did we get from last episode, Craig? I know you're keeping track.
We got 24 likes the last time I looked and one comment.
We got a lot of likes, but I don't think you can hover or click over to see who liked it. I tried to, and I ended up liking it.
I used 24 different computers in the last week.
Mike's our bot system.
Mike has 24 Facebook accounts.
Well, he's got 24 personalities.
In the book, he has 29.
Misrepresented. So, whoever's liking us, keep liking us.
Thanks.
We don't know who you are.
Oh, here's one other technical thing. A couple things. If you're going to comment, if you can, if you will, try and comment on the actual episode page instead of any Facebook posting.
Go directly to darkwingsdorkwords.com and go to the episode page where you'll find the embedded social networking plugin feedback forum.
That makes it easier for Craig to stalk you. Page.
Charlie Chaplin.
Let's not tell our listeners what to do.
No, listeners do this.
No,
do
as we need like. To.
It's so much more rewarding when comments are unsolicited. We know from the one time it's happened.
Well, I can't take that, what I said, back.
Please comment.
For the love of God, someone.
I need this.
Validate me.
We need 99 more Keiths.
It's true.
All right.
Next week. I'm excited.
New season is on the way.
We'll see you.
We're on the run.
I have a reason to live for the next 9 weeks.
If anyone comments.
You outro.